not backing down. This girl is on fire. This girl is on fire. We're walking on fire. These girls are on fire.
Good evening. In the news tonight, public housing residents say NYCHA is making them sick.
They can't breathe in the apartment.
Donald Trump says a new immigration executive order is on its way.
We will be issuing a new and very comprehensive order to protect our people.
And New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark-Vividito says we have strength in numbers.
And together, we will build our own wall of resistance, nuestro propio muro, against destructive immigration enforcement policies.
With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Thursday, February 16th, 2017.
I can't breathe.
Protesters could be talking about Eric Garner, who couldn't breathe when placed in a chokehold by NYPD officer Daniel Pantaleo in Staten Island, but they are chanting over a crisis in their own backyards in NYCHA public housing. On the steps of City Hall, public housing residents are wearing face masks.
Because they're telling you that NYCHA's making them sick, that they can't breathe in the apartment. I wake up at least three times a night because I'm overheating in my apartment. I'm on the ground floor, the windows are open. I have direct contact with the engineer, and still the problem's not resolved.
Karen Blondell is with the Fifth Avenue Committee, and she organizes with Fury, Families United for Racial and Economic Equality. She says we have a lot of sick building syndrome going on in NYCHA.
And most engineers know what that means. That means poor maintenance on ventilation systems. That means they're not doing the caulking systematically around the windows to insulate the building. We don't have... our heat is either too hot or it's too cold. We are getting sick in the apartments. And we have a lot of money for Sandy recovery as well as for capital improvement.
And it hasn't been used
but
yet.
We have to be trained as residents under Section 3 to do our own repairs.
Section 3 is?
Section 3 is a HUD mandate that 30% of all new hires go to local residents. We still don't see the numbers from NYCHA, even though the Congresswoman Nydia has requested it. I've requested it as an organizer. I still don't see the numbers as to how many people are being hired to work locally in NYCHA.
Blondell is from Far Rockaway. Ann Valdez is from Coney Island, both areas affected by Hurricane Sandy.
I'm in Gravesend Houses in Coney Island. And my friend here who's speaking is from Far Rockaway. We are still living on temporary boilers, and the heat is not coming up adequately, and neither is the hot water. We have walls falling apart, roofs that are constantly leaking. They claim to be fixing it, they claim to be using the Sandy money, and it's not getting used. And then when you look around, the people that they're hiring are not the local people, and this is not appropriate, because we are the hardworking people that have to live there, and yet we are not getting the choice and the chance to live in an apartment where we are in good health. Everything is falling apart. I live in the oldest project in Coney Island, and we didn't get hit as hard, but in Coney Island houses, they got hit very hard, okay? In Haber houses, which was all seniors, they got hit hard. When this hurricane hit Coney Island, there was nobody from NYCHA around to help us. We as residents got together and helped each other. I'm a member of Community Voices Heard. I've been with them 14 years. We fight these issues together with Fury, together with the Urban Justice, together with these organizations, together with all these unions. We all stick together because we have to live together. And we should all be able to live, as well as the mayor and all these other politicians. So we deserve to live like human beings.
Broken elevators, molds in the bathrooms, problems with the electrical systems, bad pipes, no heat on some weekends, too much heat. These are some of the problems residents are facing on a daily basis in NYCHA buildings. Vernell Robinson is with Community Voices Heard.
There are still residents, such as Mrs. Tori Mosley,
who believes she developed COPD from living in such conditions. Conditions within Carlton Manor. Now, there are other people who in Carlton Manor who have recently died from cancer, such as Mrs. Mary Tipton, Mrs. Marie Shine, and Mrs. Cheryl Davis, who all relatively had good health all along. Then they all live in 7115 Carlton Manor. There are thousands and thousands of more residents living in public housing throughout the city who are dying from these conditions. Living in these conditions diminishes our physical and our mental health. It exacerbates the health issue crisis in low-income communities, especially the black and brown communities.
Robinson points to how inadequate and unhealthy housing can also contribute to infectious chronic diseases adversely affecting childhood development. And while New York City's Mayor Bill de Blasio announced $1 billion to fix leaky roofs over the next 10 years, Robinson wants to see $1 billion a year going into NYCHA for repairs. Bronx Councilmember Richie Torres is chair of the New York City Council's Committee on Public Housing. He also says $1 billion over 10 years is not enough.
And $1 billion sounds like a huge investment.
That's a band-aid.
Right? The mayor would argue that it's more than any other mayor. But more than any other mayor does not mean that it's good enough.
Exactly.
Is the city doing enough? The answer is no.
No.
Is the city doing its fair share? The answer is no.
No.
Now, public housing adds enormous value to the city of New York.
Right. We're the largest.
Right. There are 500,000 people who depend on their livelihoods for public housing.
Yes.
So think of what the city is saving.
Exactly.
When it comes to providing affordable housing to 500,000 people through public housing.
Right.
Think of the cost savings that comes with preventing homelessness. The truth is that the city is getting more value from public housing than it is contributing. And the time has come for the city to contribute its fair share.
Yes, sir.
And so $1 billion over 10 years is substantial, but it's not sufficient.
It's not enough.
The city is not doing its fair share. And every level of government, including the city, is failing the residents of public housing.
Yes, they are.
Now, it's good that we're replacing the worst roofs in public housing. But what about the bricks? What about the plumbing and the electrical system? What about the elevators and the boilers?
Yes.
Right, there are residents who are languishing and molded and leaking conditions because the bricks in their buildings have yet to be pointed.
Yes.
Well, you have senior citizens who don't have heat and hot water because the boilers keep breaking down.
Right.
I had a senior citizen in Boston World Plaza who died as a result of malfunctioning elevators.
Wow.
Well, you have residents who face repeat gas outages
because
the plumbing systems keep breaking down.
That's right.
So don't tell me that $1 billion for roofs is enough. It's not enough.
Not enough.
Train the residents, Section 3.
If we can invest $2 billion in a streetcar, which will gentrify some neighborhoods, by the way.
Definitely.
Then surely we can invest the same amount, if not more, in the homes of 500,000 New Yorkers.
Torres is pressing for more funding. The New York City Council will be holding a hearing on NYCHA on March 15. Public housing residents and advocates say they'll be there. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York.
Say that your laws will protect us all, but you're really just turning your match. You act like a child when you're criticized with fake news and alternative facts. It's been no time since you declared victory. Already spiraling out of control. AI hide inside your own indignity when you refuse to acknowledge the toll. Oh, you push us and push us and push us some more. Be that all that we can stand. I don't need someone like you running my land.
George Pantagakis on a New York City subway. Donald Trump and his team have picked a replacement for Labor Secretary after the resignation of his nominee, embattled fast food CEO Andrew Puzder.
The nominee for Secretary of the Department of Labor will be Mr. Alex Acosta. He has a law degree from Harvard Law School. He's a great student. Former clerk for Justice Samuel Alito. And he has had a tremendous career. He's a member and has been a member of the National Labor Relations Board and has been through Senate confirmation three times, confirmed, did very, very well. And so, Alex, I've wished him the best. We just spoke, and he's going to be, I think he'll be a tremendous Secretary of Labor. And also, as you probably heard just a little while ago, Mick Mulvaney, a former congressman, has just been approved, weeks late, I have to say that, weeks late, Office of Management and Budget. And he will be, I think, a fantastic addition.
Then Trump gave a shout out to hedge fund billionaire Paul Singer, and he went on with continuous digs against the media, which he calls the dishonest media. And Trump says his administration is running just fine.
I turn on the TV, open the newspapers, and I see stories of chaos. Chaos. Yet it is the exact opposite. This administration is running like a fine-tuned machine, despite the fact that I can't get my cabinet approved. And they're outstanding people, like Senator Dan Coats, who's there, one of the most respected men in the Senate. He can't get approved. How do you not approve him? He's been a colleague, highly respected, brilliant guy, great guy. Everybody knows it. We're waiting for approval. So we have a wonderful group of people that's working very hard, that's being very much misrepresented about, and we can't let that happen. So if the Democrats, who have, all you have to do is look at where they are right now, the only thing they can do is delay, because they've screwed things up royally, believe me.
And Trump says the Ninth Circuit, which froze his immigration ban, is in disarray, not his administration.
Extreme vetting will be put in place, and it already is in place in many places. In fact, we had to go quicker than we thought because of the bad decision we received from a circuit that has been overturned at a record number. I've heard 80%. I find that hard to believe. That's just a number I heard, that they're overturned 80% of the time. I think that circuit is in chaos, and that circuit is, frankly, in turmoil. But we are appealing that, and we are going further. We're issuing a new executive action next week that will comprehensively protect our country. So we'll be going along the one path and hopefully winning that. At the same time, we will be issuing a new and very comprehensive order to protect our people. And that'll be done sometime next week, toward the beginning or middle at the latest part.
And then in answer to a BBC reporter Trump disparages, he reiterates his opinion of the court.
President, can I just ask you, thank you very much, Mr. President.
Where are you from?
BBC.
Okay. Here's another beauty.
It's a good line. Impartial, free and fair.
Yeah, sure.
Mr. President.
Just like CNN, right?
On the travel ban, we could banter back and forth. On the travel ban, would you accept that that was a good example of the smooth running of government?
Yeah, I do. I do. Let me tell you about the travel
ban. Were there any mistakes
that? I know who you are. Just wait. Let me tell you about the travel ban. We had a very smooth rollout of the travel ban, but we had a bad court. We got a bad decision. We had a court that's been overturned. Again, may be wrong, but I think it's 80% of the time. A lot. We had a bad decision. We're going to keep going with that decision. We're going to put in a new executive order next week sometime. But we had a bad decision. That's the only thing that was wrong with the travel ban. You had Delta with a massive problem with their computer system at the airports. You had some people that were put out there, brought by very nice buses at various locations. Despite that, the only problem that we had is we had a bad court. We had a court that gave us what I consider to be, with great respect, a very bad decision, very bad for the safety and security of our country. The rollout was perfect. Now, what I wanted to do was do the exact same executive order, but said one thing, and I said this to my people, give them a 1-month period of time. But General Kelly, now Secretary Kelly, said, if you do that, all these people will come in the month, the bad ones. You do agree there are bad people out there, right? They're not everybody that's like you. You have some bad people out there. So Kelly said, you can't do that. And he was right. As soon as he said it, I said, wow, never thought of it. I said, how about 1 week? He said, no good. You got to do it immediately, because if you do it immediately, they don't have time to come in. Now, nobody ever reports that. But that's why we did it quickly. Now, if I would have done it a month, everything would have been perfect. The problem is we would have wasted a lot of time and maybe a lot of lives, because a lot of bad people would have come into our country. Now, in the meantime, we're vetting very, very strongly. Very, very strongly. But we need help, and we need help by getting that executive order passed.
Just a brief follow-up. But if it's so urgent, why not introduce...
Yes, go ahead.
Evidenced by massive demonstrations across the country and in New York against the travel ban called a Muslim ban, many disagree there was a smooth rollout. New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Vivedito says what we have seen coming out of the White House is sure chaos.
There's been a real chaos in terms of the implementation of policies, right? These policies make no sense. Executive orders, we still don't know a full scale of what the administration seeks to do. And I think it's different in different parts of the country, right? What we're hearing happening, for instance, in Colorado, what we've heard about this, you know, young man that was a DACA, you know, had the DACA designation by President Obama, you know, those are troubling cases, right? They don't seem to be targeted enforcement. They really almost seem to be this dragnet approach, which really is problematic. In the case of New York, you know, in the case of what happened last weekend in Staten Island, having conversations, you know, we're not 100% clear, but it does seem that that was more targeted. So it's very just chaotic in terms of the lack of consistency and how these policies are being implemented. So there's a lot of genuine fear, understandably so. And, you know, we are going to be announcing some measures that we will take, and we continue to implement reforms, and I actually had the list here. I can share it with you. We've done a lot of work to really reduce the level of interaction that people have with the criminal justice system as a way of trying to ensure that people with low-level offenses are not being dragged into a situation where they may be deported. I know that there's calls for additional measures to be taken. We're going to look at all of that. But there are things in terms of the Criminal Justice Reform Act, right, that some situations are not going to be treated with a summons in a civil manner, not a criminal law. Those measures help, right, eliminate people having to interact, fingerprints, et cetera, and might put them, unfortunately, in a path to deportation. But right now, there is chaos. There's an incredible inconsistency in the way these policies are being implemented and who's getting caught up in it.
And today, Trump says the new executive order will be tailored to the court decision. He repeats this four times.
I find it very, very hard doing what the law says exactly to do. And, you know, the law is rough. I'm not talking about new laws. I'm talking the existing law is very rough. It's very, very rough. As far as the new order is going to be very much tailored to the what I consider to be a very bad decision. But we can tailor the order to that decision and get just about everything, in some ways more. But we're tailoring it now to the decision. We have some of the best lawyers in the country working on it. And the new executive order is being tailored to the decision we got down from the court. Okay?
And Trump says he is going after sanctuary cities. While he was speaking in Washington, D.C., there is a nationwide action going on called A Day Without Immigrants, illustrating immigrants' contributions to the U.S. economy and way of life. One woman says, "This makes me so sad that this is what it has come to." Meanwhile, New York City Council Speaker Mark Vivedito was delivering her 2017 State of the City address at King's Theater in Brooklyn.
There is strength in numbers, and together, we will build our own wall of resistance, nuestro propio muro, against destructive immigration enforcement policies.
The speaker outlined a number of initiatives reaffirming the city's commitment to immigrants and its commitment to being a sanctuary city for all. This through prioritizing the confidentiality of city-collected information, limiting the physical presence of ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement agents, to city property, and expanding the role of the Mayor's Office of Immigrant Affairs. Here's the speaker.
First, we will not waste city resources to help immigration authorities locate otherwise law-abiding New Yorkers who pose no threat to public safety. We will not be a pawn in that game. Next, the council will pass legislation blocking ICE from private areas on city property and offices where New Yorkers receive social services. Unless they have a judicial warrant or court order. And we will not allow officers of the Department of Probation, the NYPD, and the Department of Correction to act as ICE agents and enforce immigration law. They have better things to do. And because even minor violations or misdemeanors can trigger deportation, the council will pass legislation creating a city alternative to the state penal law disorderly conduct provision. This new charge will carry a lower possible jail sentence and will not trigger the adverse immigration impact of the longer state sentence. As with our Criminal Justice Reform Act, the punishment must fit the crime. Next, we'll defend the right to free public education for all children by restricting ICE's access to schools, students, and student records. And we'll arm parents with the knowledge they need to protect themselves and their children in school. Las aulas deberían ser recintos seguros para aprender. Furthermore, we will not let the federal government tarnish the trust we've built with our immigrant communities or impede the way this city functions by taking our data and using it to track down and harm law-abiding New Yorkers. So we will use all the tools in our power, including going to court, to make sure our personal information stays secure. And we'll create a comprehensive system to limit the information we need to collect to run our city and impose strict guidelines for what we'll disclose to federal officials. We'll build a team of experts to guide this process and review requests from the federal government for personal information. This team will serve as our watchdog, monitoring changing federal laws and executive action, and making sure that we're putting people, their privacy, and our communities first. The council will also increase our support for immigrant legal representation by working to baseline funding for legal services to protect the rights of those facing deportation, and to make sure that we deliver social services as effectively as possible. We'll significantly expand the role of the Mayor's Office of Immigrant Affairs to coordinate all city services that touch immigrants. We will also work to support families who have been hurt by harmful immigration policies by establishing at least one immigrant family resource center in each borough. Así es. En la unión está la fuerza. We're never stronger than when we work together. And that's why we're preparing a nationwide convening of sanctuary cities for lawmakers who want to support their immigrant communities. We will join forces to develop advocacy strategies and discuss best practices and shared goals.
New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark-Vivodito delivering her third and final State of the City address, Who We Are. There she outlined a detailed agenda to empower communities through justice, access, and fairness. You can view her entire address by going to our website, WBAI.org, or to the New York City Council's website at council.nyc.gov. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. As I went a walk in that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway, saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. I roamed and rambled, and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts. All around me a voice was sounding, this land was made for you and me. When the sun comes shining, then I was strolling in the wheat fields waving and the dust clouds rolling. Voice was chanting as the fog was lifting, this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, and this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. When the sun comes shining, then I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving, the dust clouds rolling, the voice coming chanting, and the fog was lifting, this land was made for you and me.